All right, welcome to the Fit Vegan Podcast. I'm your show host, Maxim Seguin, and I'm the founder and CEO of Fit Vegan Coaching, a company that is on a mission to help 10,000 people get lean, thrive, and reduce their risk of chronic illnesses by 2033 and a million by 2050. I believe that having a fit, healthy body and mind is the foundation to living an incredible life, and this is what the show will give you if you choose to listen and implement. Enjoy the episode and have a great day. All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Fit Vegan Podcast. Today, I am joined by Mark and Wanda Uberman, who are the president and executive director of the NHA, so the National Health Association, which I've had the pleasure of being on you guys' podcast with Frank. And so we're very excited to have you both on here today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Pleasure to be here. Honored.
Beautiful. So I know a lot of my listeners already know what the NHA is. And for the new listeners, can you guys explain a little bit what that is before we get into your story?
Sure. Well, we are the oldest organization on the planet, advocating a whole food, plant-based diet and lifestyle, something we've been doing since we were formed in 1948. A lot of people think that the whole food, plant-based health movement came around when Forks Over Knives came out in 2011, but we've been championing this diet and lifestyle again for, we just celebrated our 75th anniversary last year. And, you know, though there are a lot of conferences that go on, you know, for PCRM and Plantrition and all that, we've been doing conferences since 1949. And we'll be doing our annual 76th annual conference in Cleveland on June 28th to the 30th. So we've been around a long time championing this diet, and a lot of the stars of the health movement found their voice and their first place to speak at our conferences and in our magazine, Health Science. And so we have a pretty proud legacy, and we just keep doing more and more and more. And particularly since Wanda retired from her job to become the executive director in 2020, we've really expanded our offerings from just doing a conference and doing a magazine and being a membership organization. Now we do travel. Now we do a podcast. Now we have a newsletter. We do a lot of stuff to kind of support the whole food plant-based community. We think we do it. We support it really well.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So how was it? How was the first conference compared to now? And how was it seeing the movement change? Because, you know, I would say like veganism has gained a lot of popularity, and kind of as it has, whole food plant-based has gained a little bit more, but it's still not as big as I want it to be compared to like where all the fake vegan products kind of are right now. How was it seeing that evolution? Because I know you guys have big conferences now. I can only imagine what the first one was like.
Well, probably the biggest change that Wanda gets a kick out of is that I literally started attending conferences when I was like 10 years old, and we kind of wrote the book or defined the word whole food, because at our conferences, when you had our banquets, whole foods meant tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers. It's come a long way. But truly, you know, at the heart, there is still a philosophic side to that. You know, T. Colin Campbell wrote the book Whole. Really, when you get down to it, you know, the vegan movement, as I'm sure you know, doesn't exactly equate to health. Everything can be vegan and not necessarily be healthy. Potato chips are vegan, but they're not particularly healthy. But in the NHA, you know, the emphasis has always been on whole foods. And getting things in their whole natural state to the extent possible. But in those early days, whole didn't even mean baked potatoes. Well, I think the emphasis was on raw foods.
Yeah.
Raw whole foods. I mean, I think that's, you know, was again at the core, the closer you get to nature is kind of what we were all about. It was vegan by definition because, you know, there were no dairy products involved. There was no salt, there was no sugar. It was, you were trying to get as whole natural as you can. But the biggest evolution that I think has come, particularly in the last probably 15, 20 years, is that, you know, you can make, you know, split pea soups and things like that without salt, oil, and sugar, and taste good. And there's even a recognition, I think, as science has evolved, that, you know, you're not going to eat beans, most legumes, raw. You're not going to eat kale and spinach raw. They're not even that digestible. So, And you know, while maybe there were some old notions that cooking food would destroy the enzymes, science has evolved and we've evolved along with it. So, but I think where what distinguishes the NHA from just about everybody else is that we really put out a gold standard of whole foods means exclusive whole foods, not plant-based, but whole foods, and that we do it, we think the gold standard is without the pleasure trap foods of salt, oil, and sugar. We know not everybody does that. We're not the police. We're not saying, hey, you put some salt on your corn, that you violated the golden rule here. But we set a standard. We think this is the key to optimal health. And the closer you get to it, the more you can control your health destiny. But in answer to your original question, you know, it is quite a change from the world, the natural. We used to be called the American Natural Hygiene Society until about 1980, something like that. And we changed the name of the National Health Association a little more. People could understand it a little better. But it was the emphasis, the core. There was a philosophic side to it that you want to be as close to nature as you could, as unadulterated as you could, as unprocessed as you could. And the wonderful thing for me is that science has come to validate all that. You know, what my parents raised me in this business, in this lifestyle, was almost more of a religion. They believed it. They believed the people that were advocating it, that, you know, yes, they were doctors, but they didn't have a lot of science behind them. They just empirically knew it worked.
Yeah.
But now we got science on our side. We have the Adventist studies. We have the stuff that True North Health Center does. We have all the stuff PCRM does. And every time a new study comes out, it simply validates what we've been teaching from the beginning. And that's what's incredibly rewarding about the legacy of the National Health Association.
Yeah, that must have felt good, because I feel impatient about how slow the movement is, like, coming along. I've only been at it for a decade, so I can't even imagine, like, 7+ decades in, you're like, finally, we have the proof. We have the studies to show people that what we've been saying is true.
It was very cute. Mark's mom used to, she moved in with us. She was working at 90, came home from her health food store that she was running, and fell in her driveway while hauling garbage and broke her hip. So she moved in with us after that for her recovery. And I would have small gatherings at my house to teach about food prep. And she would hear these ladies talking about how hard it is. And she was so sweet. She would just say, oh, darling, let me tell you what it was like in 1959 or 1962. And so you realize it's not so hard compared to, even when I first started 30 some years ago, you couldn't buy things in local grocery stores. So we live in the Northeast and winters are long. And I thought if I had to live on vegetable soup and apples and oranges, I wasn't going to do it. Now you can get anything you want year round, much easier.
Yeah, there's more food availability. And you guys know, as soon as you get into it and you start to learn how to cook and prepare the food, because obviously of the food availability, it's really easy to make really delicious meals without it being overly complex and without people being left feeling unsatisfied kind of with the flavor or the volume or the quantity of the food.
You know, it's so interesting to me too, is that, again, one of those changes in the way the world has come is that in this diet and lifestyle, you know, no matter what taste you got, if you like Mexican food, if you like Cajun food, whatever it is, you know, thanks to the incredible contributions of chefs and process and people in the entrepreneurs like Well Your World, Dylan Holmes, and what Joel Furman has done, the product lines, there's almost no excuse for living this lifestyle saying, oh, it's too hard, I miss these tastes. From nachos to everything else, you can make them healthy. And that's just an amazing evolution that I've seen, again, I've been following this literally my entire life, but to watch that evolution has been remarkable.
Yeah, I bet. So question for you, what was the original kind of intention behind starting the NHA originally? Like, was it more like a health component? Was it more an animal cruelty component? Was it more an environmental component?
Health. It was all health. That's what distinguished, you know, it was inherently vegan because veganism was, you know, you were whole foods. You didn't use animal products. Animal products weren't health. But it was not for that. I mean, that happened to be a part of it. It worked. Same thing for, you know, things like animal testing and vivisection. It certainly supported that. organic farming. It supported that because, again, the closer you were to nature, the healthier, healthy soil, healthy plants, healthy people, you know, healthy diet and all that. That was all part of it. But we were all about health. The American natural hygiene, the term was hygiene was the science of health.
Yeah.
So that was the core, and it was a group of about five or six doctors and a couple of lay people that all championed this diet and lifestyle, the foremost authority of whom was Dr. Herbert Shelton. He's kind of like the father of the modern natural hygiene movement that kind of synthesized the work of a bunch of 17th, 18th, and 19th century visionaries about, you know, looking at health in terms of not treating symptoms, but trying to identify cause and recognizing what diets were health promoting. And so that was their interest. And the unique aspect of a bunch of the founders is that they also recognized that water fasting was an interesting adjunct of helping people to restore their health when they've lost it, recognizing that the body had enormous power to heal itself, to be self-correcting if given conditions conducive to recovery. And those ideal conditions were a physiological rest, where you were truly resting and just consuming water for a period of time. And now through the work of, you know, the science and the studies of Dr. Alan Goldhammer, he has again validated scientifically what a lot of the founders of our organization, like Dr. Shelton, Dr. Esser, Dr. Curcio, these people, what they all just empirically observed. They saw their patients would come in with diabetes or heart disease or a breast tumor, and they would, you know, undertake a period of water fasting and then adopt what we call now a whole food plant-based diet, and they would get well. They would restore themselves. That's been the core of what the enemy, but it has entirely been health. But again, we've recognized as we've come along and as more and more is known about the state of our planet and environment, that we've recognized that the elements of health are more than just diet. It requires fresh air and clean water and being free of contaminants,
sun and exercise,
and radiation and all those things. So that's why we champion regenerative agriculture, why we champion, you know, health freedom, why we champion pure water. Those are all concerns, but at the core, it's emanated from a health standpoint, not from a religious standpoint, not from an animal rights standpoint, although they all fit together.
Yeah, of course.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
There's a great quote by a guy, one of the real visionaries of the one modern health reformers, a guy by the name of Russell Thacker Trawl, who had this magnificent quotation about the science and the health that we endorse is true. It's correct in science, in harmony with nature, blah, 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 sound in philosophy, and a blessing on mankind. It really is all of those things, but it emanates from a health standpoint. That's the concern and now why we're called the National Health Association, not the National Health Religious Association.
Yeah. What I'm curious, was there, because I feel like doctors now are starting to open up to the idea of prescribing a whole food plant-based lifestyle as a means to kind of help heal the body, depending on kind of what people are going through. And it still feels very taboo. It still feels like there's a lot of resistance. I can't imagine doing that in like 1950. Like, how have you guys noticed the resistance becoming? Was there more in the early days of NHA? Is there more now? Like, I'm very curious to know, because I feel social media amplifies and people take camps and there's more fights the more that we're kind of exposed to the rest of the world. I'm just curious how it was when you started.
I think that in the early days, we spoke to the true believers. This was the gathering of the believers. And Dr. Shelton used to say, give me five good hygienists. And he didn't really care about the rest of the world. For those that wanted the message, he'd give it. And obviously, they'd give their public lectures. We'd have our conferences. But it would be the true believers. Fortunately, through the internet, through, you know, the evolution of science and some really great voices that have given credibility to this movement, it's a different world. I mean, it was when I mentioned earlier about the significance of Forks Over Knives, the documentary, when it came out, it was a big deal. I mean, it gave credibility and respect and was able to reach audiences that we could never have dreamed. And as you know, there have been a series of documentaries that have come out since then that are magnificent vehicles for spreading the message And though there are these differences, you know, how many nuts you should have, or can you have a little bit of olive oil and things like that, but in the big sphere of things, the respect that is now given to a whole food plant-based diet is pretty magnificent, pretty impressive. Maybe one of the best examples of that is that we started this plant-based travel that Wanda really developed with one of our members a few years ago. Now, Windstar Cruise Lines, one of the largest cruise lines in the world. Now, whether you're on an NHA cruise or you're just traveling on Windstar on one of their ships, there's an NHA branded menu, which is a whole food plant-based menu that you can get. I mean, that's hard to fathom that we would have enjoyed that kind of respect 10 years ago, let alone 50 years ago, that exists today. And, you know, Neil Barnard will say often that, you know, you can go to almost any restaurant and get a vegan option today.
Yeah.
It's not a strange thing. It's not, you know, the healthiest thing you would ever want, but the fact that you can get it is a sign of the times and the raising of the consciousness and the awareness and the respect for this diet and lifestyle. When I grew up, people would talk about me growing up as a kid eating rabbit food. I think if you're a vegan today, I don't think you're looked at as eating rabbit food or something stupid. It may not be for me, but it certainly has gained a respectability. And when you have voices like Michael Greger and T. Colin Campbell and Joel Fuhrman and any number of these explosion of people certified by ACLM and Plantrition.
Yeah.
We got a long way to go, but this is quite a remarkable shift in consciousness and respect that certainly wasn't around when the Natural Hygiene Society was holding its conferences in the 1950s and 60s and even 70s.
Yeah. I feel like
much better times.
I feel like Forks Over Knife was like the first big boost for the plant-based movement when it came out. And there was a lot of great documentaries that kind of came after that. But I think Game Changers was another big one that gave it a really big boost after. And I can, because it addressed more the athletic side. Yeah. It allowed us to grab another segment of an audience that was like not necessarily health oriented, but athletic, right?
One of our favorites is What the Health.
That was another good one.
Tightly done and very, very well done.
So yeah. Was it Kip Anderson that did that one?
Yes.
Yeah, we saw him at dinner the other day. Another great documentary. And so I want to dive into like your stories as to what made you go plant-based. So from what I got, Wanda's been like 30 some years, Mark, it sounds like a lifetime of a transition. So let's start with Wanda. I'm curious kind of like how that came about for you.
Right. So I was raised on a farm. And my grandparents had a large tobacco farm. My parents had kind of a gentleman's farm, and we grew our own meats and vegetables. My brother worked the dairy farm, so we got our milk not from the store. I have no recollection of going to grocery stores. I grew up out in the country. My mother went to the grocery store, but it was quite a drive, so we didn't go with her. She would pick up small things. And that was the only lifestyle I knew. And fast forward to a time when I met Mark. So that would have been in 1989. We were both working in the legal field. And so we met through colleagues. And somebody just said, oh, I think you guys would have a nice time. He's a vegetarian. I didn't know anybody vegetarian or vegan or Jewish. So it was quite new, but I thought, all right, I can have a plate of cheese and crackers and, you know, vegetables. And when he comes over, I'll have a little snack. I'll have some wine. And then we were going to a show and he didn't touch any of it. The conversation was really good. So I didn't even really focus on it. And quite frankly, I never even liked cheese, but I just thought that's what you're supposed to do. So that's what I did. And he didn't say a whole lot about it. We just went to the theater and we had a great time. We talked about other things in life. And then not much time went by and I happened to stop at the health food center that his parents ran. His parents spoke more about the lifestyle than he did. And they gave me a couple of books. And I had a child from a prior marriage that was 5 years old when we met. And she was scheduled to have her tonsils and adenoids out, just like so many other children with throat, sore throats and ear infections.
Yeah.
And his dad had given me a book called Sugar Blues. He said, maybe you just want to eliminate some sugar. So I made really subtle changes. I'm still cooking my chicken cacciatore in the crock pot. But Mark lived between my house and my job. And so it was very convenient if he said, stop over after work, I have dinner made. And it was pretty simple dinners, but it was still, I didn't have to cook or clean up. That was nice. And so just with these subtle changes, then 3 months later, I took my daughter back for her pre-op. And the doctor was so upset with the nurse for bringing him the wrong charts. And finally, he realized he had the right chart. And he told me to take this child home. She didn't require surgery. And she never had a ear infection or a sore throat after that. So that was pretty remarkable. And so I started making a few more changes. It was years before. I was a little bit stubborn. No man was going to tell me how I was going to live or raise my child kind of thing. But I liked the salads. And his mom, his parents were just, I loved his parents. And they would make foods. Mark also had a child that he was raising by himself when we met. So he had a 3-year-old daughter he was raising by himself. I had a 5-year-old daughter I was raising by myself. So the kids played. We had our careers in common. And then just gradually, and I can say that I didn't fully embrace the lifestyle for many years. I got rid of meat, of course. That was easy. It was getting rid of dairy, salt, oil, and sugar. That probably took decades. So it wasn't until 2000, actually when I became vegan, now I'm eating more processed foods. I was on the road a lot for my job. And so I thought, okay, I'm vegetarian. I can go through Taco Bell and just say, take off the meat, put on some extra cheese and beans. And I can go to Burger King and get a meatless burger and French fries. And I'm eating a salad for dinner, so that felt like a pretty big change to me.
It's a good, it's a balance.
But what happened is I never had a weight problem my entire life. I ended up gaining 50 pounds when I went vegetarian because I was eating so much processed, calorie-dense food. And it wasn't until 2011, so we had already been married 20 years, and I'm in my 50s by then, and I just didn't really feel sick. I just felt tired a lot.
Yeah.
And I thought I was too young to be feeling that tired. I didn't feel as sharp to keep up with the demands of my career. And I just said, I want to go to True North. And I called Alan Goldhammer and he said, get a one-way ticket. Tell your company you're filing for medical leave and I'll explain it to them. And I don't know when you're going home. So our kids were teenagers by then. Mark could take care of them.
Well, they're having I want to point out, this was a six-figure job. She was saying, oh, I'll just get a one-way ticket.
Hopefully. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know where my, because
it's medical a big leap.
In the States are, they have to secure you a position. They didn't have to keep my career position that I'd worked so hard to gain.
Yeah.
And so I did. And I did a 21-day water fast, which gave me that physiological rest I needed, because prior to that, I was drinking coffee to wake up in the morning, wine to go to sleep at night.
Organic coffee, organic wine, silk creamer, all healthy.
And I went out there and I had that physiologic rest. I stayed another 2 weeks after I finished the fast to kind of just really acclimate to the lifestyle. And at that time, David Goldman is one of the people that was heavily involved in Game Changers. And he was their exercise guy. And so I realized at this age I needed to be, well, at any age really, but they had actually diagnosed me with sarcopenia. I couldn't do 2 push-ups. And so they're like, you've got to start, you've got to get the sleep. And so now I look at it as my four legs on a stool. For me, it cannot be just food. It's food, it's sleep, it's exercise. And then it's something for my peace of mind, my personal spirituality.
Yeah.
And I did that and I came back and that was 2011. And it's just been full speed ahead with the best quality of life I could have ever imagined.
What always impressed me about it, Maxime, and still does to this day, is that You know, when you're somebody like me that has grown up literally from day one in this lifestyle, this isn't willpower. It's not resisting the pleasure trap or the temptations of life. To make fundamental change is a tough thing to do, and nobody can tell you to do it. You have to do it on your own. And I love Wanda not because she wasn't a vegan or because she wasn't my same religion. I love Wanda because I love Wanda. And it wasn't my right to tell her what she should do. But when she made the change on her own and decided to join this lifestyle, I mean, it was like, for me, dying and going to heaven. But it was just wonderful. I say often that when I got that call from her at True North saying, hey, I'm coming home. I want the pantry empty. I want all the Amy's pot pies and the coffee Keurig. I want it out. I don't want to see it. Like Chef AJ says, if it's in your house, it's in your mouth. She didn't want to see it. And I said, boy, God bless me. And it was gone. And she came home. And, you know, when she says about exercise, it was not the center of her universe. She's now an exercise fiend. And we both are. I mean, it actually got me to start adding that dimension on a regular basis. So I think we both recognize that, you know, this is the way of controlling your health destiny, the decisions you make, how much you sleep, how much what you put on your plate, how much you exercise. But it was quite, and again, 2011, for we were 20 years, we were married. And she wasn't a fast food junkie, but you know, it was a journey.
Yeah.
She's now on the same journey that I am, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's patience right there on your side, for sure.
I will say
the thing that I don't see in many marriages, when I gained 50 pounds, it was like I had to go back and look at pictures. It was so, to me, it was so subtle. It's like, when did I start looking like this? And, you know, it took about probably 8 years before I gained that kind of weight. But Mark, nobody ever said anything to me. And people will say, oh, you weren't that heavy. Well, I'm not super skinny now. 50 pounds was a lot back then.
But I think it goes back to, I think one of the ways Wanda was able to make the decision on her own and just decided, but you know, I've never been a proselytizer. I grew up on raw foods for 32 and a half years. I mean, I've lived a very different life than most people do, but it's never been my position to proselytize about this diet and lifestyle. If you, on this podcast, you ask me what I think about all these things, I'll talk to you all day long. If you don't, we'll talk about sports. We'll talk about theater. We'll talk about politics. We'll talk about all those things because that's just a means to an end. But in my relationship with Wanda, I never considered it my place to tell her how she should eat or whether she should eat like me or look down on her because she doesn't, whether she doesn't, she's not the same religion as me. That's not the way it should be. I think that's a good way for most people to go through life. I've watched one of the observations that I've had for my decades in this lifestyle is it can really be difficult when it's a husband, but not a wife, or a wife with not a husband living this lifestyle, not just cooking two meals, but it's sometimes you can get angry with the other person for doing something you think is killing them. But there is a little bit of condescension and judgment that goes into that, that I don't think is a healthy thing to do. People got to come to this lifestyle on their own. And God bless, you know, I was hoping 20 years in, maybe Wanda would get there. But when she did, this is pretty remarkable and pretty lucky me, lucky her, lucky us.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that because I definitely, obviously what I do for a living is I coach people. So there's obviously like always one partner that's plant-based and the other is not really open to the idea. But on a personal level, I don't know if I've shared this with you guys, but, or if you've seen this in any of the content, but I lost my previous partner to breast cancer. It's going to be 3 years at the end of this month that she passed away. And I was her caregiver for 5 years and she transitioned to eating whole food plant-based when she got sick. Because that's how I was already eating at the time, because I've been vegan for almost a decade now. Immediate changes in her health. And so even though she kind of went through that and she ended up, you know, passing away, when I met Ivy, she was eating fish. She was more of a vegetarian. And I remember her first date, she's like, hey, can I order fish? I'm like, you do whatever you want, right? Like, I'm just not going to eat it. I'm just going to order what I want. And when we moved in together, she's like, hey, like, I still want to eat fish. I'm like, I bought her pan. I'm like, that's your pan to cook fish on. Just don't put it on the other pans, even though you clean it. I don't want to touch it. But I was patient with her and it took her a year and a half And just on her own, same thing. She was just like, I don't need the fish anymore, right? Like the meals are good by themselves. I feel full. I feel satisfied. Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of great results out of trying to push your partner in a specific direction.
I don't think it's just anything in life. I don't think proselytizing, whether it's religion or politics, doesn't work. You do it by example.
You do it by leaving space and example. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. And so for you, Mark, how was it growing up as a basically raw vegan you mentioned originally when you started?
Yeah. I often say that I've never met anybody like me. I've never met anybody that grew up on raw foods from day one, went through elementary school, middle school, high school, college, post-college, practicing law, till I was like 32 years old. I didn't have a baked potato or a piece of bread or a piece of cake. And in the 1950s, the world was very different than it is in 2000. We didn't have salad bars. We didn't have, it was just very different. And I think the only thing that I think that allowed me to endure is that I've always been pretty comfortable in my own skin. I knew who I was. I had wonderful parents. You couldn't draw up a closer family. And if my parents, who loved me, my brother and I unequivocally, that if they thought this was the right diet and lifestyle for me, for my health, for my well-being, I didn't question that. They loved me unequivocally, and that they did. And they took me to conferences. So I had other friends, but I don't know. It was real. I mean, there were kids that made fun of me for eating rabbit food, for doing these things. But, I often said that people will make fun of you or keep making fun of you if you let them make fun of you. And I never did that very much. And so, again, I've always been a pretty social guy. I had a big social circle of friends, was involved with life, involved in activities, sports, things like that, theater. So, what I ate was my business, and I didn't try to impose that on anybody else. So, but was the world different then? Very different then, than it is today. But I was happy eating a salad. I had virtually the same meals 3 times a day for forever. But and I guess the other thing I'll add is that Wanda mentioned earlier that my parents were kind of not just great people, but they were pioneers in the health food movement, and they were pioneers in the organic produce movement before there were standards, before there were that. They would have always the best cashews, the best mangoes, the best tree-ripened pineapples, the best fruit. And so my friends, of which I had many, loved coming to our house because the food was great, we had. So, I had that advantage going for me, I suppose, that, if it was just eating a salad of iceberg lettuce and hydroponic tomatoes, it would have been pretty boring. But now I had the best cashews. I had trail mix before people even knew what that was. I was wearing around cashews and raisins and dried apricots and hazelnuts in my pocket. And my friends enjoyed that too. And they happened to be without salt, oil, or sugar back then. But and I like cashew butter and peanut butter and things like that. Raw cashew butter, raw peanut butter, but still pretty good. But it was different. Again, I'll repeat, I'd never met anybody that grew up like me, but that was okay. And as I look back on it now, I think, what an incredible birthright I was given.
Yeah, definitely.
To be raised that way. Now everybody thinks this is a lifestyle they want to get to kind of hold on to their longevity. I have that foundation built in. And I don't know, I might drop dead of a brain tumor tomorrow, but I don't think so. I think that everything I've been doing, the way I've been raised, is very health promoting and health extending. And I still make those decisions every day. So I just consider myself incredibly lucky, and it's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, well, I think you are. It's a big blessing to have grown up that way, because a lot of people grow up on the salt, the sugar, the oils, and kind of these processed foods. And then kind of like Wanda mentioned earlier, you have this, it feels like you have to be disciplined to eat this way. It feels like you're depriving yourself as you're transitioning, until you do and you realize that you're not. But when you're hooked on the sugar, when you're hooked on the processed food, it messes with your head, and it makes it harder for people to kind of to make that transition long term?
Most people in this lifestyle are about trying to recapture their health, because it's Caldwell Esselstyn says, you know, most people have can do a lot to their bodies for a long time, 40s, 50s, but then the warranty runs out and things happen. And then they adopt this lifestyle to reverse their heart disease, to reverse their diabetes, to reverse their hypertension. I don't have a lot to reverse.
Yeah. He did a lot of prevention.
I hope it stays that way. I hope so.
Yeah. It is. I don't know who I was having this conversation with. It was, I can't remember. It was one of the other doctors. I think like Clapper or Dr. Greger, but most people that are, again, in this movement, most people that are wanting to take action, something bad happened. Like they got diagnosed with something, they had some health issues. There's not a lot of prevention that takes place. And so, like, you know, for you, you have years of prevention on people. To me, I'm definitely in a preventative space because I saw what it was, cancer firsthand. I was like, I don't want that for myself or for anyone. So I feel that that's a blessing in that odd way. But yeah, I feel like too many people wait until something happens to be like, hey, maybe I should consider eating whole food plant-based and eating this way.
We'll often say when we're talking to people that you don't appreciate your health till you've lost your health.
Yeah.
And then people want, you know, they want information. And it still amazes me how some people will want the information, absorb it, grab onto it, and move forward so quickly. I wasn't one of them, but there are lots of them that do. And others will just keep putting up roadblocks time after time. I think I had the blessing at True North of
getting True North
food acclimation. You know, I did a fast. And then, so for me, salt was a big deal and coffee. Those were my two kind of crutches. And I have not had coffee a drop since 2011. I'm sure I've had salt. I'm sure I've had other things with caffeine in it because I bake with 100% chocolate sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's just not the same. And the blessing is now, if I am that tired that I'm craving coffee, I need to sleep. I don't need to drink coffee and keep going. So it's learning to reacclimate and give your body a chance.
Yeah.
You mentioned about people, the health crisis that oftentimes is what causes people to, you know, to reconsider their diet and their lifestyle and all that. But again, one of the things that the National Health Association, you asked about the principles upon which we were founded as the American Natural Hygiene Society. There's a book written by one of our co-founders by the name of Jack Duntrop. And he was his claim to fame, he was the producer of the Hopalong Cassidy series way back when. But he wrote a book that kind of captured, the title of it captured what our organization is all about, called You Don't Have to Be Sick. And it is this really common sense living that this lifestyle, this diet and lifestyle that has been championed by, you know, the American Natural Hygiene Society, now the National Health Association, and the people, you know, the 18th and 19th century pioneers, you really can control your own health destiny. You don't have to be sick. This diet and lifestyle can give you great vitality in life and not be subject to, you know, the dependency of a drug for the rest of your life or dialysis or all of these sort of things. That's the promise and the blessing of this diet and lifestyle. But it's really all been about teaching what are the elements of health so that you don't have, yes, water fasting is an interesting adjunct and intervention to help maximize the power of the body to heal itself when it's in a position of distress. But the goal is not to be in that position of distress. And those elements of health, one to mention the four stools, you know, that it's exercise, it's good diet, it's rest, it's productive activity. Those are core principles. And, you know, God bless, I think the thrill that Wanda and I have thinking about the future of the NHA and our legacy in the future is that, you know, there are young couples like Dylan Holmes and Reeves that Well Your World and Brittany and Mark Giroudi, young couples that are coming to this, you know, a little older than me, but still in well within the warranty period, that they don't have to worry about their warranty running out because they can make those changes now and raising their children that way. that's the real excitement, thrill, satisfaction, and all that. But it really is the core message that you don't have to be sick. Sickness, there's a one of the things that we love to do in Health Science Magazine that we publish is sometimes publish these timeless teachings. And two of the best that I've ever done that were done 50, 60 years ago by one of the co-founders, Dr. William Esser, whose grandson, Dr. Stefan Esser, is a wonderful, charismatic voice of this lifestyle medicine movement today. But he wrote two articles, Illness is Not Inevitable. And he wrote a corollary, Is Illness Inevitable? And it's not. It is not. It is not some curse that God rains upon you, or that breast cancer is in your family, so you're doomed to have breast cancer. Hypertension is in your body, in your family, so you're doomed to have it. We're here, our organization, our health movement. And I think the whole explosion of interest in lifestyle medicine is all saying that, no, really, the prescription is not in a pill. It's in a smoothie. It's in broccoli. Yeah. It's in cruciferous vegetables. Those are the prescriptions doctors are more and more writing, and it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and you know, one thing to add is, you know, a lot of those vitamins and pills that you take are isolates of the whole food that you're supposed to be consuming anyways. But I definitely want to talk about NHA and kind of like the work that you guys are doing. But I just want to touch on one last point, Wanda, from your story, because if I could have a superpower, it would be able to snap my fingers and make people have that moment where they have cancer, but they don't actually, and they have that wake up moment where they want to change. Like, that is a superpower I will pursue for the rest of my life. The closest person I found to be able to accomplish that is Tony Robbins, through kind of his work and his line of questioning. We were just in Hawaii with him like 3 months ago. Like, he's masterful at what he does. But you mentioned that you went to True North for 21 days. I think what's powerful about that is I think it allowed you to take a pause on your life and just kind of reflect about everything. So I'm curious, when you came back, obviously you cut out the caffeine, you cut out the sugar to a certain extent. Did you go back to your lifestyle of like to the career, to the potentially higher stress schedule? How did you handle it differently? How did that go?
I did. I love that question. So there was my dream job, and it was regional management as opposed to litigation management. It's what I was doing. And I had applied for that job twice. And when I came back, everything was going fine. I did go back. I actually took 6 weeks off. So I fasted for 21 days and I stayed a little bit longer. So by the time I came back, I was feeling strong and confident in what I could do. And I just decided I was going to sleep more. And like I said, if I was on my way to an appointment and I needed coffee, I'd make up a story. Oh, there's a traffic accident. I'm going to be there 15 minutes late. And I would close my eyes for 15 minutes. So I adjusted my lifestyle to do what I needed. I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I learned that I don't have to do a 10 in everything I do. Some eights are fine. And the most interesting one was that position that I had applied for twice and did not get came open again within about 10 weeks of me coming home. And I'm like, oh, rejection's hard. Do I want to do that again? And I literally can remember the day I had the application on my desk and the hiring manager called, and he's the one that called before to tell me that they were hiring X instead of me. Yeah. And he said, I hope I didn't say anything that made you think you could never apply again. You know, don't misunderstand my call. I'm not telling you the job's going to be given to you, but we were certainly hoping we'd get to interview you again. And I said, I appreciate the call. I actually do have it on my desk. Yes, I will submit it today. Submitted the application, went through this lengthy round of hiring interviews. And the result was they came back and said it was the strongest interview they ever had. I got the job. I loved the job. I did have a little more control, you know, the higher up the management rank you go, a little bit more control of your life you get. And the other interesting thing was when I was traveling at home office before, or traveling for meetings out of state, when everybody else is going to happy hour, after I came back from True North and I had this commitment, I would say, I'm going to arrive early. And so management knew this. I'm going to arrive early. I'm going to rent a car. Everybody else is Ubering to the hotel or the conference center. I'm renting a car because I need to go to Whole Foods and I need to make sure my hotel room has what I need. And when they were at happy hour, I would eat a big salad. And if I knew what restaurant we were going to, I'd call ahead because I'm in business meetings. I don't want it to be about my food. I want to have it pre-planned.
Yeah.
When the waiter takes my order, I just say, oh, if you'll tell the chef Wanda's here, he's already got my meal made. And, yeah. You know, everybody else is talking. Nobody even notices that versus me spending 10 minutes trying to design.
And it sounds more badass too. Like, Wanda's here. Get me my meal.
And so I just was willing to say this is what helped. People could see the clarity. I was able to think and be sharper on my feet. They saw the weight I lost. So I looked healthier. I was healthier. And it ended up people asking and the respect. And it was great. And when I went to the conferences or to my home office and they would have meals, they'd notice I wasn't eating much. For 10 years, I wasn't eating much of these things, but now I'm eating with some people that noticed, and I gave them Joel Fuhrman's book, and I gave them books, and they added whole food, plant-based, SOS-free meals to their options, and other people were eating it, and certainly lots of lawyers and experts that I would be eating with that would have health problems, they would come and call me. They didn't all stick to it. But it was really satisfying. And it was a little hard to give up that career. I loved it because I could live it on my terms.
Well, I think if I could add, I think that when you asked how did she maintain the diet and lifestyle, I think there is a discipline about it. So you not only did she, as she said, you know, she'd make those choices about renting a car and going to Whole Foods and making sure the meals were right. But also, I think SOS, you know, there's that old argument in this thing is, can you have a little bit of this, the moderation, you know, there's a little bit of cheese, a little bit of dairy, a little bit of wine, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of that. I think you've been pretty strict. You've maintained a discipline.
20 years of kind of push-pull.
Yeah.
When I found that I liked it and I acclimated, I often say to people, honestly, 100% is so much easier than 80 or 90%. Because at 80 or 90%, I was teasing myself all the time. I was my worst enemy. I am so blessed. I'm so glad that I enjoy that 100%. And now if I happen to really want something and I take it, I don't know what that something would be. It might be a piece of carrot cake that might have sugar in it if we're eating out. If that's something I choose twice a year, I choose it, I enjoy it, and I move on. But it's not a norm.
That's beautiful. It sounds like, you know, God had a different plan for you. He had to say no twice so you can go through the experience of, you know, pausing for 6 weeks and then coming back. And then ultimately having that confidence allowed you to like stick to it and ultimately have impact beyond yourself.
Right. And that's the greatest gift is, you know, if I feel like I've helped just one person, and I do get those phone calls that people would be like, oh, I was just diagnosed with heart disease. Do you think I'm okay? I'm already 60 years old.
Yeah.
So to be able to have, you know, as the executive director, I have a bigger bullhorn. I get to talk to a lot of people, but even well before I was the executive director, people look to people that they want that information from and that they see those results.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Well, let's dive into the NHA and the kind of the work that you guys are doing, because a lot of people are familiar with some of like the trips and more of the conferences, but just let's just imagine there's a bunch of people that may not know about NHA. So let's go in depth as to kind of what you guys do, what you offer, and how people can get involved.
So the biggest, I think one of the biggest things that we do where we are most known, aside from our annual health conferences, is we publish a magazine called Health Science. And we've been publishing it since 1978, and it is a quarterly publication, comes out quarterly, it's 40 pages long. I think you've seen it, it's first class. It's unique in this health movement that it has no advertising in it. It's just articles on health, interviews with the leading stars of our health movement. There are recipes in it, but it's not a recipe magazine. You know, we feature a different SOS-free chef in each issue in that. But it's, most people tell us that it's the one magazine they read cover to cover. We have a nice mix of testimonials and information and articles, and it's it's well laid out and all that. And all of that is free, that 40-page print publication, for a $35 basic membership, or $55 if you live outside the United States. It comes free. It comes in your mailbox. It's not an ebook. You can get it if you want to go green and you want to get it electronically. You can do that. But it is a real magazine. It is, again, we're pretty proud of its quality, of its standards, and it comes free. And when you become a member of the NHA for that $35, you get access to all 46 years now of back issues for free. They're all searchable. They're all downloadable. And so that's a pretty big member benefit. And then on our website at healthscience.org, which is, again, the same branding that we've used for probably 30 years now, because, again, you asked earlier, we're health science. We're about the science of health. So we've kind of stuck with that. But on our website at healthscience.org, we recently kind of redid that a few years ago. But all the recipes, if you don't want to read 46 years of back issues and just go to the recipe pages, we have them all organized and archived in recipes. If you just want to read the interviews with Michael Greger and T. Colin Campbell and Joel Fuhrman and all these people, all the interviews are all there, just kind of collected. So there's a lot of robust information. And then if you're interested even in the kind of the pioneers of this health movement, we're actually working on that part of the website right now, buffering it up. You can gain all those timeless teachings, and they're all for free on our website as well. So all of that for $35 a year, it's one of the best bargains around. We're a 501c3. Donations to us have always been tax deductible. We don't sell anything but information and health and knowledge. Our annual conferences that we do, our one in June this year is sold out, the in-person conference. We'll shortly be opening a virtual option for people to attend that can't afford to come. But it's a remarkable community experience that people can have. So those are the big things we do. And then most recently, we've added a podcast. We have a free e-newsletter. You don't even have to pay $35. You go to healthscience.org. You sign up for our free e-newsletter. There'll be a pop-up right when you visit the website right away, so you can't miss it. You sign up for that. That comes out every 2 weeks with some of the best of health science and some of the best SOS-free products we come across and the best SOS-free recipes, feature articles and news. That's all for free.
I want to mention.
And then travel.
The travel, I think the thing even our members forget, as you page down toward the bottom of our website, there's something, it's under news and events. I need to find a better way to categorize it. But it'll show Vitamix and vendors, and that is gated. You have to be a member, and you click on, and you can get discounts. So if you're going to buy any Vitamix product right now, you're going to get 15% off with your NHA discount. And I'm just working on building other vendors to put in there and just give more value for what that $35 is.
Kind of like AARP. You know, you're a member of AARP, you get a discount here, you get a discount there. And really, instead of taking affiliate payments like a lot of people do with these things, we just pass along to our members. If people will be good enough to offer that benefit to our members, it adds value. So that's something really that Wanda's added in the last couple of years. We never even thought about doing that, but we do it now, and it's pretty valuable. People join just to be able to, you know, save $100 on a Vitamix. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, right there, you get your money back.
The trips have been fabulous. We started that in 2019. And honestly, 2019 was an okay trip, but the chefs didn't get it. And what I learned was when I first started, I was speaking to the management of the cruise line. Now I won't work with anybody unless I have direct access to food and beverage and chefs. And
yep.
So I work for years with these chefs. Windstar is our premier line, and those chefs are just fabulous. And like Mark said, they don't necessarily have an NHA menu, but everywhere on every ship, on every cruise that food is served, you pick up the menu and there's going to be this leaf logo of NHA. And anything with that leaf logo on those menus, you can order. So we're leaving next week, and we're going to Costa Rica and Panama. And there are about 80 NHA members taking that trip. But then the following month, we're just taking a trip on Windstar by ourselves to Europe. And we'll just eat where everybody else is eating, and I'll just eat off the menu, and that'll be fine. And I've just recently started adding land travel. I don't even yet have this on my webpage. One of them, we're going to Tuscany in May. We rented a 100% vegan agrivilla. And
we're just
going to meet up in Florence, and it's limited to 20 people. It's going to be very intimate. We're going to rent bikes and ride electric bikes if you want, regular bikes through the countryside. Everything I do with travel, I want active opportunities and healthy food. And the most exciting one we're planning is I offered, and that's we have different levels of membership. I'll touch on that. So you can be a basic member for that $35 or $55 outside the U.S. Life Century Club members pay $100 a year, whether they're U.S. or not. And after 10 years, you would become a life member and you'd never pay for membership again. It's just forever. You're going to have these benefits. And some people choose to donate that $1,000 or to purchase a life membership. So our cruises and our travel sell out so quickly now that I offer it to life members first, and then to Century, and then to Basic. Well, I'm doing a trip to South Africa in 2025. It sold out in 6 days with our life member. One Century Club member got a ticket, and we have a wait list. And if I get 20 more people on the wait list, we're going to do a back to back. And so we'll be able to take 40 people to South Africa. So the idea that we kind of choose exotic places, it is pricey. It's not for everyone. We realize that. But it's for those that are going to travel anyway. They get to travel and do it in a health promoting.
You know, I know, Maxime, I'm sure you've been in this lifestyle for a while. And, you know, whether you're traveling to the Grand Canyon or whether you're trying to do Galapagos, I mean, one of the biggest challenges in this diet lifestyle is, you know, is there a Whole Foods? Is there a market or things like that?
Yeah.
One of the wonderful things we've done that we've added to support this lifestyle on another level is we take care of all that for you. I mean, we just came back from a wonderful trip to Greece where we had 80 people, 60 people on Greece that all three meals every day, you come back to the ship and there's your breakfast, you know, your fruit, your breakfast buffet, your lunch buffet, your dinner buffet. It's, we don't have to worry about communicating enough. We used to take the old cards, you know, a little card about you could take to help translate to somebody in Greece or in Italy, what you want for your meal. We take care of it. I mean, it's an amazing, I personally, I mean, I love to, Juan and I both love to travel, but to have that taken care of,
it removes a lot of stress.
Come true for this diet and lifestyle. And I think, again, it's another way that we think in the NHA that we are supporting this community of people living a whole food, plant-based diet and lifestyle. You come to our conferences, you're with 350 like-minded people all sharing meals together, sharing the joy of this lifestyle. You get our magazine, you're supported during the year with information about this diet and lifestyle and
share.
Other people. And then adding on the travel is like icing on the healthy cake.
You'll laugh at this one. So I love the chef that's doing our conference this year because it's his third year. And I said to Chef Sam, I said, I have to work with these international chefs. As a chef that I've worked with you, do you have one tip that you wish I had told you the first time we started working together? Right away, one tip, so important. You guys eat a lot of food. You tell those chefs that they're hosting 50 people to prepare food for 150, because you eat three times more than any other organization.
So lots of fruits and vegetables, lots of cutting, lots of chopping.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to go to a conference this year. I'm excited.
I think you'll be amazed.
Yeah, I'm excited to meet you guys in person. And so where can people find the information for the conference?
Because I know it's going to be our website is healthscience.org.
Perfect. Because I know there's going to be, so for the people listening, there's going to be virtual tickets available that you guys can purchase. Obviously, the conference is sold at this point. And so I'll put the link down below in the description, whether you're on YouTube, on the podcast platform, the link's going to be right there.
So watch the platform. I'm going to be hosting the virtual conference. It used to be called Hop In. That's who I did it the last 3 years with. It makes it very interactive. They've been bought out by a platform called Ring Central. And if you attend virtually, when we're having Q&A with Dr. Esselstyn or any other doctor on stage, we're going to let some of the people in the audience ask, but you're going to be scrolling. It's going to have like almost a Zoom appearance where you can talk to each other, you can ask questions, and I'm going to have somebody take the microphone and say, oh, Maxime is in our virtual audience and he has a question about diabetes. And so they're going to get to participate more than many other virtual.
You know, one other thing, Maxime, that I want to share, and I do that often on podcasts, is that, again, we're a 501c3, we're about education, we're proud of what we do, but we think people should have the right to look before they leap. So if Health Science Magazine, we think it sells itself, something of which we're very proud. If any of your listeners, any of your viewers, email mhuberman@healthscience.org or whuberman@healthscience.org, we'll send them an electronic copy of the latest issue of the magazine. And if they like it and they join, we'll send them a print copy, as long as we get extra, we always buy some extra copies, but it does sell itself. But that's an offer that we'll make to all of your viewers and all your listeners. Just email us, mhuberman@healthscience.org, whuberman@healthscience.org. You can put that in the show notes and that, and we will send them an electronic copy absolutely free. And if they like what they see and they join, we'll send them a print copy and they'll be on their way.
And for those that are interested in the virtual conference, you're going to be participating in the virtual conference. So I love that they're going to get to hear more from you as well.
Yes, absolutely. It'll be a virtual conference. I'll be there in person. And for the emails and all the links that you mentioned, I will list everything down below for everyone so they don't have to kind of figure anything out. They just get to click. We've got to make it easy for people to click on the link. Yeah. Well, Mark and Wanda, a massive thank you for taking the time to jump on the show, share your stories, share your wisdom. I really appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to meeting both of you. Again, my wife's going to be coming as well to the conference. And so looking forward to connecting in person. And thank you for jumping on. And for everyone listening, be sure to check out those links down below during the virtual event so that we can connect on there once it happens. And any last words of wisdom that you'd like to share?
Thanks for the opportunity to share our message. It's always great to reach. It's always great to meet influencers like yourself and people that, that's what's so rewarding. You know, years ago, there just weren't people like you around. There weren't Chef AJs around. There weren't Javant Bees. There weren't Brittany Giroudi and Dylan Holmes. These are exciting times for us.
Yeah.
Having been here, you know, kind of having the long arc of history, watching the long arc of history pass along. These are exciting times, and it's really is great. And, you know, you're on the younger side too. So it's great to meet, you know, and be inspired that there's guys like you on the way up. It's great.
Yeah.
And I would just say to be kind to yourself and to give yourself that gift of time. If I had not given myself 30 to 60 days, I don't think I'd have the success that I've had for the last 12, 13 years. So giving yourself that time to make the changes, being kind along the way, to me was key.
Beautiful. Those are great words to end on. So thank you very much for jumping on. Everyone, thank you for listening, and we'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, be sure to rate the podcast as it helps us grow and spread our message. And if you know this will help and resonate with someone, be sure to send it their way so that they can have the opportunity to level up their life as well.